lives in miracles.
And that is why you will never hear me mention his name.
Deliver Brexit. Unite the country.
We will make America great again.
Views on News with Mark Latham.
Leader of One Nation in New South Wales. We welcome to the program each and every Thursday afternoon. Mark Latham. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Great, thanks, Brent. Good to be with you.
You're still awake?
Yes, I had a good night's sleep last night. Not much the night before, just half an hour after the Parliament sat from 7pm to 7am. And I was able to sleep for half an hour in the office during the one-hour breakfast break. Not often you have a breakfast break in Parliament, but we did, as the government abolished the rule that we adjourn at midnight and sat us through the night to push through this dreadful electricity bill.
So the Berejiklian government's renewable energy bill ended up being passed by the New South Wales Upper House after more than 30 hours of continuous debate. What do they say in the paper? Amid a concerted effort from One Nation to block it. Now tell us, because you had 249 amendments.
Well, we did, and our objections are twofold. One was the content of the bill, and the other is the process that they followed, because normally the New South Wales Upper House, you know, you only need a tree frog to fart, and they'll set up a parliamentary inquiry, a committee hearing, yeah. And in this instance, they're turning upside down the New South Wales electricity grid. That's a huge change and high risk for our economy and millions of jobs. So you'd think, instead of rushing it through in the space of a fortnight, you'd send it off to a parliamentary committee to look at all the facts and figures and make sure that you're trying to get it right. And in that regard, important documents were withheld even from the New South Wales Cabinet. There is, for instance, a independent audit report on the modelling that says that the assumptions are very optimistic. And in fact, what the bill will do is bring forward the closure of the existing coal-fired power stations, particularly those in the Hunter Valley and the Central Coast. And that could generate a supply shortage, send up the prices and lead to blackouts. So why wasn't that document tabled by the minister so we can look at the risks involved in his bill? So the process was dreadful. There was also an attempt in the upper house by the Liberal National Greens coalition to deny access to any of these documents. Again, it's a fairly standard procedure to have that FOI process. So, you know, we had major concerns that people had been locked out in having their say. They've declared renewable energy zones without asking any local people if they want them. For instance, the Hunter and the Central Coast have been declared renewable energy zones. They were never part of the market operator planning for that. No generation capacity target has been set. They're kind of a political trick on the Hunter in particular, because if the existing generators close, you lose jobs, lose manufacturing through the energy insecurity. And these renewable energy zones are just a PR stunt. They're not actually going to be set up in the Hunter Valley in any meaningful way. So that's a huge concern. And in the content of it, it's not just the risk to jobs. The bill has an electricity tax embedded in it, such that the minister can levy the electricity distributors to pay for the renewable energy, and they pass that cost on to the consumers. So my estimate is that it's probably $400 a year to pay for all this underwriting and investment in pumped hydro and batteries and wind and solar. It's supposed to be a $32 billion plan. And ultimately, the electricity bills will go up. The consumers are paying for it. The bill was wrong in content and wrong in process. So we had a lot to protest about. And it was only One Nation and the Shooters that tried to hold the government to account. Labor, the Greens, Liberal, National are all in bed together for this bill, and they were going to rush it through in the space of a couple of days.
Mark, why are Labor, the Greens and the Liberals all in bed together with this?
Well, Matt Keane is a Green Liberal. He believes in picking winners. This is normally a disaster in government policy. They continued the ban on nuclear. I moved a motion to lift the ban on nuclear so we could compete against the renewables and provide energy security, and that was rejected. So Matt Keane doesn't believe in nuclear, he doesn't believe in coal, he doesn't believe in gas, he just wants renewables, sun and wind that don't operate 24/7, so it's high risk stuff. Labor has the same set of beliefs, and the Greens look to the sky and see the sun god. So that's the basis of their commitment, and for Labor it's particularly disgraceful because they're supposed to be the opposition party, but they provided no opposition to this bill. The opposition came entirely from One Nation and the Shooters, and the Legislative Council, which is supposed to be an upper house of review, performed absolutely no review functions other than the ones that were in our 249 amendments.
Do you see this as dangerous policy?
Oh, absolutely. It's very dangerous for the economy, for jobs, for deindustrialisation. We've already lost investment in the New South Wales because we can't guarantee a reliable energy supply. And Brent, this has all been done on a climate change agenda. When you look at the minister's data and convert it into other figures, this is being done to reduce global carbon emissions over a full decade, so over 10 years, by 0.2%. 0.2% over 10 years, and it converts to a change in global average surface temperatures of 0.01 of a degree. So barely measurable. A complete, you know, a drop in the ocean. That's all it is. So why do that? This crazy green ideology. Why do that to turn upside down the New South Wales power grid, to abandon coal, ban nuclear, to sideline gas and go full on down the path of wind and solar that can't keep the lights on, and then have backup plans for battery storage, which is an unproven technology on that scale? And the other ludicrous thing is their other backup plan is pumped hydro schemes. Now, we haven't had a dam built in New South Wales for 33 years. And these people are now saying we're going to have hundreds. There's a dam at the top of the hill and a dam at the bottom, and they pump it up and down, and that's pumped hydro. And the research on that is scant. They're relying on satellite mapping by the Australian National University that identified 8,500 sites, and no one's visited any of these sites. No one's gone there and said, oh, well, this is viable for pumped hydro, but it's supposed to be the future of our electricity supply to get the investment to do it. So at so many levels, this is a farce. The minister lied about the benefit to consumers. He said it'll cut your power bill by $130 a year. That is on a hypothetical 15 years from now, on a model where the government sat back and didn't do anything about the closure of the existing generators and didn't put any new capacity back into the system, something that would never happen. So that's a meaningless piece of data, and the minister's trying to spin it out there in the media to say you're about to get a cut to your power bills. Absolute and complete nonsense.
When governments are trying to push through public policy and legislation in such a short period of time, it doesn't look right and it doesn't smell right either.
No, it doesn't smell right. It's a very good point, Brent, because it's a very complex bill. It runs into 40 or 50 pages of legislation, and it's got an extraordinary feature to it. You know, if you take renewables out of it, let's set renewables aside. This is a new system they're introducing that you'd normally think would be the Electricity Infrastructure Investment Authority. It would be a statutory authority to underwrite private investment and put public money into the construction of wind, solar, battery and pumped hydro. And you'd have someone who's an independent public servant appointed to run this. He'd have expertise, or she'd have expertise, in the energy sector as head of this new statutory authority. Instead of doing that, which is standard practice and it keeps the minister at arm's length, they've made the minister's office the statutory authority. The minister's office is becoming the electricity infrastructure investment body, because all the powers are with the minister to appoint people, to levy fees, to pass it on to consumers, to make regulations, to make the generation targets, to make the capacity orders, to make the call for corporate information. The minister is entirely in charge of this new system. Now, in the parliament, he's the member for Hornsby. He won't have time to do that job. He's also minister for the environment. He won't have time to do that job. He set himself up as the CEO of the new Electricity Investment Authority, and he'll be 24/7, and his ministerial staff will be involved in this. And it's just plain wrong. We know that Matt Keane's faction of the Liberal Party is run by Michael Fotios, who has investments, big investments and money to make from renewable energy. All the more reason why the minister should have kept himself at arm's length and ensured that an independent statutory authority full of experts was doing this instead of the minister's office.
This renewable energy bill has passed, right? So is it now set in stone?
Well, yeah, it's gone through. There's a couple of amendments the Greens had. They were laughable. They said we need to take account of Indigenous points of view and Indigenous employment. Well, hang on. They declared these renewable energy zones in New South Wales without asking any of the Indigenous and the traditional landowners. They just marched out and said, New England will be a renewable energy zone. Central West will be a zone. Southwest of New South Wales will be a zone. And then when they debated it in the lower house, they started the day with those three zones and they ended the day with six. Hunter Valley, Central Coast and Illawarra. And nobody asked any of the Indigenous about those zones either. So the process is as bad as you can get. The legislation is drafted as poorly as you can get. And the amendment will be passed by the lower house tomorrow when it goes back to them, and then it will go to the governor for assent.
Matt King says his renewable energy plan will deliver some of the cheapest electricity prices in the world, boost investment and create jobs, particularly in regional areas. Is he selling us a pup?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He started the year with an electricity strategy. He said that his plan would produce 2,400 jobs over 10 years. That's 240 jobs per annum. You know, not much at all, especially when he's trying to wipe out the coal industry and the Hunter, which has 75,000 coal-related jobs. So 240 per annum in a recession is not a lot. Now he's saying, and the figure's 9,000 jobs out of this. And the truth is that if you look at a solar farm or you ever fly over a windmill farm, there's no people working down there. There's no people doing things. You can run some of these windmill farms with a dozen staff. And the jobs just aren't there. This is not a big, a big employer of people. And the main funding of it comes from the public purse and higher electricity bills. So you're not going to get economic benefit out of this. It's not going to be a solution to unemployment. In fact, in places like the Hunter Valley, it's going to add massively to unemployment.
You tweeted today, if you took the smartest public policy people in the country and challenged them to design the worst piece of legislation imaginable, it could not be as bad as Matt Keane's Electricity Act.
Well, that's true. Whether it was an energy bill or transport or hospital or something else to do with the state government, the idea you're setting up a major statutory authority allocating billions of dollars, dealing with tens of billions of dollars of private investment, they say, and you're going to run that out of a minister's office is just fraught with danger. Now, let's set Matt Keane aside, whatever we think about him, but ministers come and go, and sometimes they put ministers in who, quite frankly, are on the take. Now, what if the minister in the future was an Eddie Obeid, an Ian McDonald, a Bob Askin, a Rex Jackson, a Matt Singleton sort of character, people who brought disgrace to ministerial office in New South Wales, as if you'd ever put them directly in charge of a system involving billions of dollars of expenditure and private investment and a whole bunch of people, I call them rent seekers, wanting to make money out of this. It should be at arm's length from the minister's office, and that hasn't happened. I spoke to a federal senator who read the bill and said he's never seen so much power and money concentrated in the hands of one minister. Now, Matt Keane could be out of that job next week. If he goes under a bus or there's a reshuffle, he's out. We don't know who we get. It mightn't even be a minister who's all that particularly interested in energy policy, because they've got to do the environment as well. So I'm afraid it's a disaster waiting to happen. It's a petri dish that in the future could breed corruption.
Mark, do you want to make a comment about Gladys Berejiklian and ignoring the New South Wales health rules by not self-isolating while she was waiting on those test results?
Well, it's just completely unacceptable. I don't know how she can go around lecturing everyone else to follow the rules if she didn't follow them herself. I had a COVID test at one stage. I had a head cold and took my test down at Camden Hospital and knew that the rules are you isolate. I couldn't leave my house. I didn't leave my house until I got the results back, I don't know, it was a bit over a day later. She got on the fast lane through St Vincent's Hospital, I understand, to get it back in a couple of hours. But in those few hours, she met with senior ministers, she voted in Parliament, she apparently grabbed someone on the arm as they walked into Parliament. She had physical contact with other people, which is entirely against the rules. So I just don't see how politicians at the top of the system expecting the general public to follow the rules, and a lot of people have made a lot of sacrifices in following the rules. Well, you've got to set the example yourself. And she lives about 15 minutes north of the Parliament House where she had the test, and she should have driven home. and done a bit of work, paperwork from there, and when she got the results, which were negative, go back to work at that time. She's got a government driver and car to take her there, and that would have been the prudent thing to do, sitting in the back seat of the car with a mask on, instead of breaking the rules that she's established for the rest of the state. So I think it undermines trust in the government and how fair dinkum they are in bossing people around, yelling out high alert all the time, and telling people in New South Wales to do the right thing when she's done the wrong thing herself.
Gee, our time's gone quick today. I've only got a couple of minutes left. Just on this shredding of the documents, they've recovered copies of shredded documents at the centre of this pork barrelling inquiry. Can I ask you, this is another, what would you say, another cross against Gladys Berejiklian's name. Do you think she's now getting to the stage where her tenure on the position of Premier is starting to be questioned or not?
Well, I think people are starting to say, what sort of person is she? They said that with the Darryl Maguire affair that was uncovered at ICAC. They've said it in relation to the COVID and the shredding of the documents. Well, nobody likes secrecy when you're playing favourites. And again, the name Matt Keane comes up because they spent $90 million in this secret slush fund pork barrel for a couple of parks in his electorate of Hornsby. Now, apparently, that's more money than the government was planning to spend on park development over the next 4 years in all of Sydney. Now, you can't tell me the only park needs were concentrated in Hornsby. This is favouritism.
Yeah.
It stinks, and it ignores the needs of everyone else who's living in an area. Say you're in a fast-growing area, you moved in, paying your mortgage. All you want is a decent playground and park down the road for the kids to play. And $90 million of the money went to one Liberal Party seat.
Which is not right, not fair. Maybe her days are numbered. I'm sorry, Mark, I've got to go to the news. We'll catch up with Mark Latham from One Nation next week. Witness.